Welcome to Yacht Crew Vlogs, where we tell the stories of those in the yachting industry. A behind-the-scenes look that discovers the individuals in the industry, their history, their passions, and what inspires them to do what they do.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Yacht Crew Vlogs right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Rhea. I am your host, and I'm very pleased to welcome my next guest, Toby McLaren. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Thank you very much for this. I think we're all surviving the heat of the summer, and the crazy summer yachting days have arrived. So it's good luck to us all over the next 2 months.
Yeah, well, it is definitely going crazy. And I have to mention that you are the sales director for Ocean Independence. And I'm sure everybody out there in the yachting industry has heard of Ocean Independence because you guys are all over the world, aren't you now?
Well, that's very kind. I mean, we'd certainly hope so. Yes, I think 14 different locations on last count. Very, very vibrant office, Fort Lauderdale in the States. Our heart is in Europe and particularly the DACH region, the sort of the German speaking area of Europe, but a busy office in the UK. And then also further afield, where are we? Auckland, Hong Kong, all the places where, you know, we hope you would expect to see, international yacht brokerage company.
Brilliant. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, you were a trainee shipwright many, many years ago. And what has taken you from that all the way to sales director at Ocean Independence? I mean, of course, you're also a sailor, aren't you?
I certainly try to whenever possible. Yes, I'm a failed boat builder, really, would be the short answer. I mean, I think probably like many lives, it's being able to be lucky enough to take the opportunities as they come along and present themselves. So yes, while working at this small boatyard restoring wooden boats on the UK south coast, the owner of one of the boats that we were working on unfortunately ran out of money. Again, not an uncommon story there. And so the boat was put up for sale, and I met my first yacht broker, the broker that was appointed to sell the yacht. And I started to work for them at weekends, running around with the ladder so that people could climb up and look at the boats stored ashore and sort of making the tea. And not quite the rest is history. Just gradually sold larger and larger yachts, and then spent a period of time doing new yacht sales. Then went back to building, working for a boat builder who built sort of steel and aluminium oysters for sailing around the world. I think that the big lucky break into super yachting was with Cavendish White. And then where we are, 2008, Ocean Independence bought Cavendish White, I think about 6 months before the global financial crash. So that's unfortunate timing, but we all lived through it in the same way that we've all now lived through hopefully through COVID, although it does seem to be on a little bit of a charge picking up as much experience along the way. I was lucky enough to be president of MEBA for a short while, which I have to say was an amazing learning experience. And to all brokers out there, I would say, join MEBA or join one of the associations. It's great networking, and you learn so much out of your own sort of field of expertise. And then lucky enough to sail the Atlantic twice. Once on a yacht that was older than I was, that was bought by a friend of mine, and the deal was that we would sort of we'd fix it because it had rolled mid-Atlantic.
Oh, wow.
And refit it and then sail across the Atlantic. We had to pump the bilges very quietly every evening when my friend's wife went to sleep, because if she'd known how much water we were taking on board through the rudder stock, she would have been a bit too excited. But the second time was on a much larger and faster yacht, and that was was also a wonderful experience. Although the reason why I did it the second time was that I've still yet to experience the sort of the blue water sleigh ride downhill crossing properly with trade winds. And so, yes, I might have to do it a third time. I've just been unlucky with the weather.
Yeah, well, can't really dictate the weather, can you?
No, that's for sure.
I don't know. I don't think we can even dictate what's going to happen tomorrow. So, I mean, good luck with the weather.
Well, I think currently, yeah. I mean, anybody who'd like to put their name forward for the next Prime Minister of the UK, you know, that job's up for grabs. And that does seem to be the way of the world for the moment. We are sort of waiting really to see what surprises the world can throw at us next. And I think really, And this is the joy of the yachting industry, is that, you know, we can all be very, very grateful that our customers enjoy yachting so much that it would seem to be, you know, whatever the weather, whatever the crisis, whatever the pandemic, you know, they still want to go yachting. And, you know, thank goodness for that. And we're here to make it happen for them.
Well, yachting has just kicked right off. I mean, you know, one of the good things, if you could say anything good came out of the pandemic, but one of the good things about the pandemic was it really made people around the world want to get back out there on the water. And so in the marine industry as a whole, it wasn't super yachts, it was super yachts, but it was from super yachts all the way down to, you know, recreational boaters. I mean, people wanted to get out on the water, and I think it sort of revived the industry to a certain degree.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, it was lovely that, you know, we all know what the benefits of yachting are, you know, the privacy, the security, the safety, the different view every day, you know, the dedicated team looking after you and so many more things. But in terms of having to sell that to people, no, I mean, it's, you know, it became very apparent during the pandemic, you know, really what all the advantages are of yachting. And luckily for us, really, there's no other sort of kind of recreational you know, facility or industry that you can choose that can match it. I mean, unless you're going to go and lock yourself away in a villa in Tuscany for 4 weeks in the summer, which isn't really going to be that much fun. So no, I mean, it was yachting all the way, and thank goodness for that.
Yeah, well, the industry definitely took a bit of a boom. And one of the things that came out of that as well is that, you know, I mean, technology has been coming on for the past, you know, 20, 25 years. And I mean, in my lifetime, the internet was invented. We're not going to talk about how old I am, but the internet was invented.
And I do remember the pre-internet days as well, I have to say. Just I'm right with you there. I remember we used to get excited when we used to get a fax.
Yeah.
But you couldn't leave it on the windowsill, otherwise the thermographic paper would come back to it and it'd be like somebody had written it with invisible ink. Yeah. But yes, no, you say that, oh, you know, let's send a fax to some of the, you know, our younger team members, and they're looking at you as if to say, what's that?
Well, I mean, even down to telephones. I mean, the simple fact that I remember my father had one of the very first mobile telephones. And when I say mobile, I mean, he was carrying around hand luggage.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. There is a fantastic shot that Mark Cavendish of Heeson has when he's talking about the history of the Heeson shipyard. Where he's got these two Arab gentlemen on board the Heeson, basically with a suitcase open on the table with a large aerial coming out of it, and are holding a telephone handset, and it's just the most fantastic photograph that must have been taken sort of, I don't know, the early 80s or something like that. But no, and it's extraordinary how you know, the technology has moved on from there. I mean, exactly as you say,
so quickly
during the pandemic it so accelerated quickly. It because, you know, we'd always, you know, the Zoom was already there, and other facilities, but the thought of you know, this customer's interested in this yacht, he can't get to this yacht at the moment, you know, our customers generally are such time poor people, but I'll tell you what, you know, I'll do a FaceTime walk around of the yacht with the customer, with the captain. We can ask all the questions, we can look at all the spaces, and in a way, slightly kicking ourselves probably that we'd never thought of that before, because it was like, okay, well, you've got to come and see the boat. Oh, well, I can't until, 3 weeks time. And you're thinking, well, someone else might have bought it by then. So, but we just have to sit and wait. And no longer do we have to sit and wait. And it has made yachting, I think also so much more real as well. Real, accessible, just to be able to have this, these quick connections and to be able to work with people, particularly our customers, when they have the time, which is the most important thing. When they have the time, yachting is high on the agenda, but we know that they have so many other pressures on their time that catching them really at that right moment is key, and technology has enabled us to do that. It's also brought our company closer together. Yacht brokerage companies are not generally big companies anyway. When you compare to sort of like, great big multinationals and things like that, we're positively tiny. I remember going for a meeting with American Express and asking, because we partner with American Express for yacht charter. We provide services for their Centurion clients. But I remember asking, how many people work in this building? Because, they were big enough to have their own Starbucks in the basement. And they said, there's 3,500 people working in this building. And I was going, well, do you know him? Do you know him? Do you know her? He said, I've never seen those people before in my life. And I was thinking about how lucky we were. But yeah, so we have, numerous different locations, but with relatively small groups of people in them. So I think we're currently about 110 people in total. Our largest office is probably just over 20 people in one place. And it was something that the team always said was, we'd love to get together. We love to see all of the people from all of the other offices and really feel a closer connection to them. But, other than having a big get together once a year, how do you achieve that? And we now do regular company seminars on Teams or Zooms. We're able to connect with the team much more quickly and introduce, new strategies to them. Also get their feedback on what we're doing again, so much more quickly than just waiting until the next time you happen to see somebody. And in addition to that, we had, I think probably as most people did, we had sort of, weekly sales calls or weekly calls with the charter team. But now with video, they've all been brought to life. So we've been able to restructure those. And one of the key things we like to do is really work as a team. And it's made the team working so much better, because everybody is able to share, their experiences. And so, particularly with the brokers, they're able to share their sort of, I've just run up against this legal problem in Greece, and therefore now, which came up on our charter call yesterday. It came as a little bit of new news to us that if you change more than 70% of the guests on board your charter, the Greek authorities actually consider it to be a new charter. So that was a new one on us. And so that was, we were able to share that with the team and likewise with the sales brokers as well. So this is, it's improved our ability to be able to provide service to our customers, but it's also improved the service overall that we're able to provide through the team working. So, and it's been that sort of quantum leap that maybe the industry had been missing for so many years.
Well, let me ask you, in regards to yacht shows. Now, having been in media my whole life and sort of new to yachting and on the outskirts of yachting for the past 17 or 18, the one thing that the entire industry was really on about was yacht shows were integral to the entire yachting experience. I mean, when it came to sales, when it came to networking, et cetera, et cetera. Now, when the pandemic happened, of course, we couldn't have those yacht shows, but sales still skyrocketed through the roof. Now, I know that for networking purposes and for those that work within the industry that want to have face-to-face meetings, these are ideal opportunities for sure. But have you found that for you as a company, that you are finding other ways to interact with your ultra high net worth individual clients? Is there a better way, or are yacht shows really necessary for that purpose?
I mean, we've long known, and it's been like the massive untalked about thing, that yacht shows for our company and for company like ours do not deliver return on investment. Not even close. They never ever have, and they probably never ever will. But because everybody else did them, and you've got to keep up with the Joneses, it right. meant that everybody else had to do them. And it's like, oh, look, that company's just done this amazing stand. So next year we have to do, you know, what we do today, plus a little bit more. So we were on this unquestioning treadmill. And the pandemic gave us cause to you know, break this mold for a moment. And we proved that, okay, well, we don't need yacht shows to necessarily sell individual yachts. And I think everybody has taken that on board. I think, but what everybody else also realizes is exactly as you say, to act as a showcase to the industry and to encourage new people into the industry. Yes, I mean, you know, we need yacht shows as a showcase. And so the question is okay, in that case, okay, who is going to pay for it, or how is it going to be paid for? And, you know, do we need so many of them? And this now, I talk to you as an exceptionally frustrated man, because we have seemingly walked back into almost the old cycle again. Yes. And yes. And you know, and not enough effort has been made to really have a proper conversation about, you know, what are these events meant to do. And I appreciate also it's difficult for the, you know, the people that make their money from organizing these exhibitions, because
yeah, but it,
you know,
it became an industry. It was becoming an industry until
it's a massive industry, and we pay for it, or at least we pay for our chunk of it, and certainly our owners and our clients do. And what do they get in return? Oh, it's really difficult. And so, you know, we're back to smoke and mirrors, and we're back to the industry not being very honest with our clients on this. And it would be great to break the mold. Unfortunately, I think that you know, we're a competitive industry as well, and we are not very good at sticking together. And
it's a bit like high school, to be honest.
Yeah, no, it really is. Really? And we're not good at sticking together, and we're not good at having industry meetings and saying, okay, we've all agreed to do this. And then you leave the meeting, and then you know that at least two of your competitors are on the phone saying, oh, guess what? They've all agreed to do this, but I think we should do exactly the opposite. And there we go. But, you know, I mean, that's life. But, you know, I mean, when people talk about, you know, maybe what Libra might not have achieved and what Miba has not achieved, it's not necessarily the default of the goal of the wider association. It's the fact that individual members find it very hard, you know, to have solidarity with the group. And I understand why as well, because, you know, when the difference, let's say, between having, you know, an okay year and having a great year is one or two big deals, then you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to follow the industry, or are you going to do that one deal that, you know, is going to be your icing on the cake for the year? And so the temptation is huge, but no, I mean, it is, yeah, again, I mean, you know, we'll see the Cannes and Monaco yacht shows, I'm sure, this year, and Fort Lauderdale, of course, you know, back in full swing, probably without question. Although having said that, I think that there's going to be challenges to really fill the birth spaces. There's a lack of product on the brokerage market is very thin right now for a whole variety of different reasons. And so can we fill those birth spaces? And then, of course, you know, there's probably been one or two Russian yachts in boat shows in the past, and you know, will they be there? Are they going to be welcomed? How is that going to be? Is also a little bit of an unknown as well. So it's going to be, yet again, it's going to be a very different September season. But just looking at the stats, so yacht sales in terms of numbers of yachts sold in Q2 of this year is 40% down on last year. So the, you know, the sales and purchase market has slowed considerably.
Last year was a record year, to be honest.
Last year was extraordinary, absolutely. Yeah. But of course, I remember the press saying, you know, in January, February of this year, look, sort of, ooh, look, it's continuing. And we're thinking, it can't go on like this forever. We are at one point going to run out of boats to sell. It's you cannot break the laws of physics. And then I think that, and then obviously concerns with the global economy, and naturally following on from, you know, conflict in Ukraine and the problems that is causing everywhere. There is a sales and purchase slowdown, and I think it will be reflected probably in the yacht shows. So whether we get another opportunity to sit down and talk to the exhibition organizers and say, look, guys, you know, we really do need to restructure this, and I hope we get that second opportunity, and I hope we don't blow it.
Do you think that part of the reason that the sales are dying as well, or have dropped as well, is because everyone is very, very aware that the money transactions are under a microscope now, whereas in the past, yes, you know, you should do your due diligence. Did people do their due? Probably not. Possibly so, a little bit. But now, you know, there is this huge microscope on the super yacht industry from around the world because of the situation between Russia and Ukraine. Is that going to continue?
Yeah. I mean, I have to say that I think this would have happened naturally anyway, simply because of market forces. I mean, as I sit here today, you know, we've lost maybe one deal due to the microscope. And in fact, in that particular case, the microscope being quite unfairly pointed. You know, the gentleman concerned was not sanctioned. And so, you know, we're still at a mystery as to really why, you know, the deal didn't go ahead, but the people involved didn't want to do it. I think simply because of the optics of it, which, you know, okay, is that really the way we want the world to go to? You know, we're all guilty of what our nation state has decided to do. You know, I voted for Boris Johnson. Should I now throw myself under a bus? I don't know. But I think the overriding factor is simply this, that the market has just about run out of product. Yeah. And it has a knock-on effect because, yes, we've got people who are in sort of like 40-meter yachts who would seriously and are very able to make the step up to 50, 55 meter yachts. But there's no 50 to 55 meter yachts out there that they want to buy. So they hang on to their 40 meter yacht. And that therefore, of course, that means that, you know, the people that are coming in at the sort of at the 30 meter level, again, I mean, they've got the same problem. Yeah. There's nothing in it. And so there will be a flood of new product onto the market when you know the time lag of the shipyard orders really kick in, and then we might see a little bit of maybe, let's say, people who might have been a little bit over enthusiastic at the end of the pandemic and thought that yachting was for them, and maybe for whatever reason it isn't. And so maybe some of these yachts will come onto the market and therefore, you know, maybe the market will kickstart itself again. But I think overall it's a bit of a natural stall at the moment. And it's something that as brokers, we're quite used to. I mean, you know, the market's always been cyclical. And so, yes, I mean, it is something that, you know, we will just have to wait it out, as it were.
What about the charter market? Are you seeing like significant changes? Because, you know, and I talked to Peter the other day as well, in regards to the fact that, you know, we have this whole generation of Airbnbers coming up and Ubers and that sort of thing. Do you think the charter market is going to grow over the next 5 years? Because this generation is not interested in ownership. They're more interested in chartering for a week here than heading over to, say, Florida and chartering there for a week and maybe over to the Caribbean in the fall and rather than have the headache per se or the cost of the ongoing, as we know, expenses and big expenses when you own your own.
It's very interesting because in a way, the market's always been split between the owners who will always own and the charterers who will always charter. And so we are seeing a dramatic increase in the number of people chartering yachts. But, you know, is that driven by exactly what you say and the fact that we're going to run out of owners in the future? Well, the current state of the sales and purchase market would suggest not. And so I think, thankfully, we're always going to have these sort of two very, very different groups of people. I mean, by comparison, we had a record sales year last year. We also had a record year for charter. And as I sit here today, and I looked at the figures again for at the end of Q2 for us, because, of course, charter statistics for the wider industry are very, very hard to come by. But for us at the moment, we're 30% up on last year. Now, I wouldn't like it. It would be a brave person to sit here and say this is just going to continue like this, because I think we saw more early bookings this year than we've seen for many, many years, which frankly is a relief to us, because prior to the pandemic, the very last minute .com bookings were starting to lead to people basically booking the wrong yachts, and there wasn't enough time available to really organize what should be the best holiday that you've ever had in the world. Yeah. And so it's a relief, I think, for the industry to see that no, people have realized, okay, no, if I want to have a very particular experience, and I want to make sure that I've got the right yacht, the right crew in the right area, I have to book earlier and not leave it to the last minute. So I would hope that our final charter result for 2022, my best guess is that it's going to be pretty similar to 2021, with less last minute bookings possibly. Or maybe we do a little bit better than 2021, but my gut reaction is and looking at the figures as well is there's been this return to booking early, which is good news. Good news for us. It's good news for the industry, because I think the industry can showcase itself so much better with planning and preparation. It means that, you know, the crews have got more chance to sort of make sure that they've got all of the everything ordered that they need to pre-order for the charters, and it's all there and done. And any special requests can be catered for. And it's good news for the industry because it means the experience that we will be delivering to our clients will meet their expectations, because I think that's something else that's happened post pandemic. It's quite interesting is that those sort of the first year that we were allowed back out onto the water en masse, some people say it was some of the best cruising that they'd ever done. It wasn't quite so crowded, but I think also people were just simply happy to be there. And so they weren't concerned about maybe some of the finer details of the charter not being right, because quite frankly, we were all happy to be alive and
outside
and happy to be on the water and yeah, everything else. But I think it's come as a little bit of a wake up call this year. We've seen from feedback from guests that no, I think the return to wanting a super high standard of service has come, and as an industry, we've got to rise to meet that challenge, and make sure that we're well equipped to do so. But then part of that is being able to plan in advance. So we need those early bookings for sure.
Let me ask you, what is the most popular charter boat size at this stage in time? You know, in the past, is it Expedition? Is it, you know, between 30 and 50 meter? What is sort of the size range that most people are looking at right now?
Yeah. I mean, there's always that sweet spot, sort of between 35 to sort of 45 meters. It's the under 500 gross ton line. It's where there is most product as well. You know, the owners know that that's, or sorry, the charterers know that, you know, the chances are is that they can get a berth where they want to go because, you know, they're not too big. You know, where allowed, that's a bit of an issue on the south of France at the moment, they can anchor in close into shore. And there's a, you know, there's just sort of a more of a sort of an intimate sort of experience, and you really feel like you're on the water. But it's interesting. I mean, looking at some of our most successful charter yachts, the ones that absolutely pile on, you know, do over 100 charter days a year, for most part, they tend to be the slightly smaller boats.
And where is the most favorite location? And have you noticed a change from pre-pandemic till now? Is it, you know, are people looking for more secretive places? Are they, you know, content with the traditional Med or Caribbean as in the past? What are the changes and where are people looking to be? What is the most popular for 2022?
I mean, it's very interesting because, again, I mean, post-pandemic, the biggest shift is the Americans were chartering, but they weren't coming to Europe. So our figures in the most popular area got completely skewed, because all of a sudden the Bahamas became one of the most popular places to go in the summer. And then of course, you know, New England as well. And just because nobody wanted to travel too far from home, just in case, you know, the worst thing happened. And then we also thought that cast my mind back, I think, you know, Greece and Turkey ended up opening up much more quickly than anybody else. We thought that there would, you know, that their statistics would be vastly improved. I mean, yeah, we had customers who said, look, we want to go, but just tell me where. I don't mind. I mean, it's just wherever you can get me on whatever yacht, it really doesn't matter. And we had a few of those conversations. But then at the end of the year, when we sat down and we looked at the statistics, it's still without doubt the Western Mediterranean remains the most popular place. So yeah, classic, you know, French Riviera, Italian Riviera, Balearics, you know, these are still really the most popular places to go. I think, again, it's a little bit of a cycle. I mean, a lot of our charter clients will sort of do the classic holiday, you know, probably two years or two or three years out of four, and then maybe year four they might go and do something a little bit different. But all in all, it's because of the facilities ashore, and because they're going with friends and they're meeting people, and the people might be in a villa or they might be on another yacht, but they'll still be in the same area. They want to go back to the favorite restaurants, they want to go to the favorite nightclubs, and these are the things that, as I mean, as wonderful as Croatia and Greece and Turkey are, and I'm a massive fan of Greece, having just got back from our annual holiday where we go every year to the Greek islands because we love it so much. But the infrastructure and facilities ashore are just not there. In bulk, and so there's just the statistics really do reflect that. Having said that, I mean, it's been great to see we are doing more sort of far away charters. You know, we're very excited for a couple of charters that are going on in Greenland this year, for example. But these are the exceptions, you know, rather than the rule. And you know, I think we've got a fairly good grip on that, because where are we? We're 650 charters a year across the group organized, so I think our statistics probably do reflect pretty much the wider market.
Well, in some of the conversations that I was having throughout the Pavi Yacht Show, which is actually the only yacht show that I attend,
you. It's my favorite. It's one of my. It's my favorite yacht show. If I had to pick a yacht show, it would. Well, no, because it's all about the yacht, frankly, yeah. And that's why it is. It is, you know, remains sort of probably the. It's the broker's favorite yacht show because it's all about the yachts. I mean, you know,
and it's definitely the number one sailing yacht show in the world too. Yes. I mean, sailors go.
Without doubt, but it's where, yeah. You know, it's I like it because the stands are all the same size and they're all pretty much dressed the same way. And the organizers have wisely said, look, you know, we don't want to start a competition as to who could build the best stand because it's all about the yachts. And I think that's led to it to be, to really be sort of, you know, a much more genuine show. Love it. Yeah.
Well, that was back in May and at the end of May, actually. And some of the whispers around where they were a bit concerned that some of the American clientele, because of the Russian-Ukraine conflict, they were worried that it was like a whole European war. And they were sort of a bit afraid of booking in the Mediterranean. Did you see that in the end?
Not in the end, no. I have to say that... I think, again, just simply because, you know, global communications have moved on so much from that, I think people are able to share content, share stories of, you know, all of the regular places that we go in yachting and know that they're not affected. I mean, if I cast my mind back many years, I remember the summer where Colonel Gaddafi said he was going to turn the Mediterranean into a war zone, and that did put off a lot of people, I have to say, from across the Atlantic. And but this time round, no, I think, and also I think the sensational news reporting has just got sort of like slightly better, let's say. but no, and I think we're all a bit wiser as well. Now, our greatest challenge today is, if we come back to your comment about the microscope, is that every bank transfer that is being sent just about anywhere is now, you know, compliance is at the top of everybody's list, and quite rightly so. But certainly, to, you know, just to talk briefly about our sort of the third pillar of ocean independence, which is operational yacht management. And, you know, they really have, particularly since the pandemic, again, if we talk about the way that the market has changed, they've really proved their worth. I think shore-based operational yacht support, shore-based operational yacht management have really proved the added value that they can give both to owners and to captains and to crews and help to cope and catch up with the sort of, you know, the ever changing sort of global atmosphere that we find ourselves in. And of course, today, I think the head of our operational yacht management wrote a note saying, look, you know, just be aware that something in the region of, there's a 40% increase in bank transfers being stopped. Wow. by the algorithms that detect when something might be up, and then the money is then washed away into a sort of like a side account whilst it's then manually checked for compliance issues. And so, you know, our team in the operational yacht management have been sort of, you know, that's then a challenge, because, you know, the money has to be kept moving, and so, you know, it is,
well, and when you're checking into it, I mean, I can see, you know, taking a look at these huge governments that have been looking into it, and we know that, I even as big as you are, and you know, your ability to look into it, the fact is, we're talking massive governments, the U.S. government trying to track down. I mean, there was that one yacht, Amadeo, in Fiji. I mean, the amount of time it sat in Fiji for months, because there was this corporation, and, you know, there's so many circles that you have to go through in order to actually take it back to where, you know, the ownership is. And the money's the same way, because it's filtered through. And, you know, sometimes it's entirely legitimate, for sure.
But it just gives, you really have. I mean, even now, you know, the yachting industry, you know, grows up. It's no longer a question of, you know, the captain has a bank account and, you know, maybe there's a joint account somewhere else. It's no. I mean, you know, the owning company has to have a bank account. The KYC has to be in place for the bank account. I mean, everything has to be sort of, you know, compliance checked, yes, audited and correctly organized. And if it's not, you know, you're going to run into trouble doing that. And of course, you want your captain and your crew to be concentrating on delivering you and your charter guests, you know, a wonderful experience, you know, and you want your operational yacht manager to be making sure, you know, that all of this stuff, you know, and more is being done in the background. So again, it's great to see this sort of this little spoken about, but hugely important sort of area of the superyacht industry, the operational yacht management side, sort of, you know, coming to the fore. And we're, you know, and our brokers are leaning on them as well, you know, wanting help with compliance, wanting, you know, help with all sorts of other logistical problems. I mean, you know, there's supply challenges, you know, because of the problems with the global supply chain. There's, of course, you know, we've spent a lot of time supporting Ukrainian crew members, and everything like that, and everything in between. And so it is, you know, I remember, you know, sometimes you're asked, well, you know, what exactly do I get for yacht management? And it is, it's fantastic to be able to, you know, actually you get all of this. Isn't it great? And people have gone, okay, no, I can see that now. Where do I sign? Again, I mean, it's all part of that package that as an industry, we've got to pull it together, in order to keep yachting, you know, as easy and as carefree and as smooth and just that great experience that we all know that it is, so we can carry on not only enjoying our livelihoods but enjoying working in this. It's just such a great industry to work in.
What's next in the next, say, 5 years for yourself and Ocean Independence?
Yeah, we've been really debating internally the future of yachting, and we've got a couple of internal projects underway. You know, one very, very sustainable focused. I mean, you know, the industry has got to tackle this a little bit more head on that it's doing at the moment. I mean, everything.
Well, there's a lot of hashtagging, isn't there? There's a lot of hashtagging. Everyone's jumping on that bandwagon, but you know.
But you know, I guarantee you, you know, if you go and walk on, you know, you're in Mallorca today, and if you later this afternoon go and walk on board a yacht, and they of course the crew will be wonderful, and they'll ask you if you'd like something to drink, and you'd say I'd love a water, please. I would say there's an 80% chance that they'll hand you a plastic bottle.
Yep.
And that, you know, if we can't just crack that nut. I mean, come on. I mean, I know it's, you know, that recent launch from Bonetti, the 37 meter beyond, which they say is, you know, the most sustainable boat that they've ever built, which is great news, possibly the most sustainable yacht in the world, even better news. But if we can't crack, you know, that one simple problem with the plastic bottles, then, you know, what can we do? And so we've got a little bit of an internal sort of back to basics program. That we're looking to roll out. I think all customers should be offered eco charter options where, you know, there's no single use plastic on board. There's everything is locally sourced, you know, rather than flown in. We look at the carbon footprint of the whole charter, not just the fuel. And then you hinted at it as well. We've got another project underway at the moment, looking at the sort of the future structure of actual ownership, because yes, if what is sort of largely predicted, which is yes, you know, the future younger users of today are not going to want to own. Somebody still has to own. Otherwise, there'll be nothing to charter. And we've got a project that hopefully is underway to sort of address and look at that. I can't say too much more because
you'll be giving away the game.
Well, no. I mean, they're not finished. But we're close on both counts. And so, no, our mind is very firmly set on you know, yeah, how. how we can be a business for the future of yachting and not just for today. And again, I mean, if I if there's a slight frustration with the industry is that we all need to look at the deal we're going to do tomorrow for sure, because we all need to put food on the table, but we also need to look at the deal that we could be doing in a year's time or 2 years time as well, and how will that be. It's hard to do, I have to say, because we're not massive multinational companies. We don't have a research and development department or whatever that can look at these things, and so it's challenging for us all to be able to carve out of our day enough time to sit down and go, okay, well, I appreciate we've got all of the the challenges of running the business today with us, but we've got to sit down and look at what the future challenges will be. But no, I'm always excited by the future, but I have to say particularly excited at the moment.
Well, I mean, that is one of the things that I, as sort of one of those observers that is always watching and always researching, I have noticed with the yachting industry is that it almost seems sometimes that they're just happy with the status quo. And if it's not broke, don't fix it. But you can't, it doesn't matter the industry. It doesn't matter whether it's yachting, whether it's boating, whether it's, selling Kentucky Fried Chicken. Not that I put the two together, but if you're not looking where your potential client is 5 years down the road or 10 years down the road or 15 years down the road, you're not going to have clients in that time frame. So you do have to look forward.
It's a combination of two things, really. I mean, I think, when I was leaving school, I mean, this industry didn't really exist.
Yeah.
Really? I mean, there are a few big yachts, but it just didn't exist. And so if you look how far the industry has come, how quickly, then, we shouldn't be too hard on ourselves. But in the same breath, I mean, we must not be complacent either. And I think sometimes we're a little bit guilty of that. And then maybe we come back to that huge point about the industry sticking to joint decisions, the industry sort of like deciding what's right for itself, and not being so fragmented and it's standing up a little bit to sort of, in this particular case, the event organizers, and saying, no, we don't believe that this is the way forward for the industry, and we're all going to stick together and do it. And we've got to sort of carry that thinking across to other areas as well. And that's where I think there's a bit more growing up to do.
So in a perfect yachting utopia.
In a perfect yachting utopia, it wouldn't look a million miles away from where it does today. I have to say, I think it's a question of tweaking and improving rather than sort of throwing everything away and starting again. And we have to look at what we accomplished today. We do accomplish providing the most amazing experiences to our customers. I mean, we just had shared on the company WhatsApp group this morning, a short video from a beach barbecue and firework display that had been put on by one of our yachts that's currently on charter in Greece. I was looking at that this morning and thinking, what an amazing experience those clients have just had. So we do deliver it today. We just need to tweak it. We need to make sure that it's relevant for the future. And how do we continue, providing that for the future? And it's all of us have to take that sort of next step in terms of professionalism and being a bigger industry, and supporting all of the parts of the industry are this huge team, the crew, operational yacht managers, the brokers, the shipyards. And quite often, there's a little bit of agitation between us, and I think that actually lets the customer down, and doesn't do the industry any good. But what we can achieve when we all work together, is extraordinary, and I think that's what we should focus on going forwards.
Well, I have to say a great big thank you, Toby, for taking the time today to talk to us.
You're very welcome. No, I'm sorry. It's being able to, I've just been able to ramble on, but no, I mean, it's great to talk about these things, and it's a debate that needs to continue. So no, thank you very much indeed.
You've been listening to the sales director of Ocean Independence, Toby McLaurin. He is coming to us from the UK. We thank him for his time. My name is Rhea Rao. I have been your host. We'll see you again next time.